Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Lost in the Static. I'm Scott.
Welcome to Violence.
Yay. Welcome to... You know what? I think we need a new opening. And it's not that I don't like our current opening. I like our opening. I want to keep our opening. But I think we need another opening to rotate through.
Because we're coming up on our second fucking year of doing this?
And I think... I think after 2 years, it would be good to have a variety of openings. That way we can get fan feedback of going, no, I love your opening, and then, oh, I love the old opening.
Or we could cycle through depending on the topic. If maybe it's a more somber topic, something like that might not fit.
Exactly. We could get like a Dateline opening, like ding, 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 breaking news for Lost in the Static or whatever the fuck we're talking about, you know.
Well, does anyone out there want to make us an
exactly?
Open? And you, of course, would get credit. Please, under 30 seconds long.
Yes.
Because I've seen there are some shows on Jackalope that bug the hell out of me.
They got like a minute and a half.
So there's one with a 2 minute long open, and it's like, are you just trying to eat up runtime because you don't have anything to talk about, or what? This is ridiculous.
It's like my friend Matt that's doing Sonic Jihad,
yep,
which is his little deal. He played me his opening, and his opening is brilliantly produced, and he did it himself, and he bought a very he bought a very expensive Mac to do it with, and he spent hours and hours tweaking this thing down to exactly where it is. 2 minutes and 47 seconds long.
That's ridiculous. That's so ridiculously unnecessary. Dude, 80s action TV series didn't have openings that long.
So, I'll tell you what. We've got some graphic designers out there that have been wonderful fans and listeners who have helped us out in designing new logos. I've got Manuel who designed me because... You know, my religion is a weird little mix between paganism and science and everything like that.
Yeah.
And he actually designed me a custom sigil, actually a couple of custom sigils that he, you know, techno pentacles that
Did you have a logo for APP?
We do. And he's worked on one. He's working on another one for APP.
And which is another pagan podcast.
Yes. He designed some business cards for us that were just absolutely beautiful. And so thank you to all of the graphic designers out there. And I know that there are some budding audio engineers out there too, because I've talked to a couple of them. I've given some advice and
you
stuff like
that. You don't even
like
need to be an audio engineer. You can just be playing around in your editing software.
Exactly. So have fun with it. If you have an idea for an opening for Lost in the Static and you like it, keep it 15, 20 seconds, somewhere around there.
Yeah, 30 seconds max.
Exactly. Send it to us and maybe we'll use it because I like ours, but change is good.
It's not necessarily bad, but we're going to be bitching about change tonight, aren't we?
Exactly.
Okay. Let me rephrase that. Unnecessary or unwarranted change.
Exactly.
And what really brings me to this, and we'll expand long, you know, past this, but is before Watchmen.
Which to me looks like another genius work within comic, and I can't even say it, let alone with a straight face. I was going to go on this big tirade about how I thought it was absolute genius and going to be the best graphic novel to come out in years, just so that you would make that face. and I can't. I just can't.
All right. For those that don't know, and I'm not sure if even you know this, do you know how DC is to this day screwing Alan Moore over Watchmen?
Yes, you explained this to me once.
Okay, I couldn't remember if I told you or not. Well, for those of you that don't know, when Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons first started Watchmen, it wasn't even the Watchmen that we now know. It was going to be the Charlton characters. Charlton Comics just had gone under, and DC had acquired them, and they wanted to bring the Charlton characters, which are like Captain Atom, Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, characters like that.
Right.
They wanted to bring them into the DC universe. So Watchmen was originally written. Dr. Manhattan was clearly Captain Atom. Blue Beetle is Rorschach, etc.
How awesome would that be?
It would have been different, let's put
That's
it that
very
way.
Very true.
But then after seeing the script, they said to Moore, we really like it, but can you make some new characters? We kind of want to bring the Charlton characters into the regular DC universe instead of what you're going to do to them. So can you change them? Can you change them just enough that they're new characters? All right, no problem. So he did that. Now, the deal he struck with DC was that DC would have the rights for a year after the final publication of the publication of the final issue. And then if they were no longer using the characters, the rights would revert back to Moore and Gibbons.
Hold on. Was that a year after the publication of the final issue?
Yes, of
issue
12. Or
a year after the publication of the final, or after the final publication?
We'll get into that. Okay. It was actually supposed to be after issue 12, since it was a 12-issue miniseries. Then basically DC had another year to find out if the characters really had legs to them.
Which, honestly, at the time, they wouldn't have. Because it took a little... I mean, Watchmen was a slow burn to get as popular as it did, right?
It was critically acclaimed, and it was a pretty damn big seller, but there's not a... Pretty much, once you read issue 12, there's not a whole lot of places you can go after issue of the series. So, what DC... Some lawyer found, all we have to do is reprint the issues once a year... And that means we're still using the characters and the rights never revert back to Moore and Gibbons. Oh. You got to remember, in the 90s, that title was dead. Yeah, but some DC lawyer said, why should we give them back? Why? All we need to do is reprint this. They're ours again.
Excellent.
So in the early 90s, Alan Moore basically, he told DC, well, you've successfully swindled me. And that's a quote. You've successfully swindled me. But I'm never working for you again, and I'm exposing the swindle you did. So he went on a tirade, and he'll never work for DC again and whatnot. And basically, DC has been fucking him over ever since by just every year reprinting it once.
Sure.
Just so the rights don't revert, which is kind of a douchebag thing. And he said the editor at the time, he really didn't think this editor was in on this. That this contract was entered into in good conscience on both sides. And it was some lawyer after the fact that said, no, man, there's a loophole to exploit. Why not?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay. And he's playing with audio settings.
I am.
He's never satisfied. He's always touching that damn board.
I am always fiddling my knobs.
In public, no less.
Yes.
In front of me. It's sick.
Right in front of Josh.
So... For years, this sat as an unused project. I mean, they tried in the mid-80s to make a movie out of it, directed by Terry fucking Gilliam.
Oh.
And
how did it fail?
Well, the script was pretty terrible. The script basically didn't take anything that the comics did. Like the comedian's a main character in the script, fighting with the Watchmen.
Wait, the entire time.
And the opening scene is them stopping a terrorist group trying to blow up the Statue of Liberty.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, you see problems inherent in this right away.
Wait, that is...
Wrong.
Not at all the message behind the book.
Right. It did have the best fuck you ending I've ever seen up to that point. It was an ending that would have pissed every single person that saw that movie off, but it was brilliant and something I had not seen ever done before.
Okay.
Dr. Manhattan explodes, and Rorschach, Silk Spectre, and the comedian, who lives through the entire thing, by the way, get knocked into an alternate world. And they're walking down the street in their costumes, and everyone's looking at them funny. And they go to a newsstand and pick up issue 12 of Watchmen. And they find out that they've been blown into our world, where they are comic book characters. Admit it. That's a pretty brilliant fucking fuck you ending, isn't it?
That is shit.
That's awesome. That actually is a pretty... It's original. You got to give them that.
It's a
In
setup.
The 80s, that hadn't been done before. That Simpsons hadn't happened and shit like that, so...
Josh.
Yeah?
That's a setup for a sitcom.
But it's a good fuck you ending.
A wacky sitcom.
But it's a great fuck you ending. Do you know who they wanted to play some of the characters who Terry Gilliam was actually in negotiations with?
I've never heard of this. How would I know?
Okay, go back to, say, 1988. Who would have been perfect to play the comedian? Big name actor.
Eddie Murphy.
Be serious.
I don't know.
Robert De Niro.
Okay, I can see that.
I saw your eyes kind of go, that one actually might have worked.
Yeah, that would actually work. That would.
You're never going to guess Rorschach.
88.
It's an actor that was not known for drama. At that point.
Okay. Tom Hanks.
Robin Williams.
Rorschach?
For Rorschach. Again, kind of picture 88 Robin Williams. That actually kind of might have worked.
No, there's not enough cocaine in the world to make 1988 Robin Williams happy as Rorschach. No.
But I don't know. They wanted Robin Williams as Rorschach. But the project fell apart, and it fell into this massive legal limbo. And so they, other than the role-playing game, that they added it for the DC Superheroes role-playing game, DC didn't do anything else with Watchmen, really.
Okay.
Other than the once-a-year reprint to screw Moore and Gibbons out of getting the rights back.
Right, okay. So we have this great little deal. The movie comes along.
Which the movie was massively troubled, too, because of the Terry Gilliam deal.
No doubt.
No. I mean, legally. They made the movie, and then they found out, oh, shit, Fox still has the license for another year.
Oh.
We technically made this movie illegally.
Whoops.
So, yeah, the movie almost didn't get released. They had to pay Fox a massive amount to kind of go, yeah, just let us release the fucking movie.
Sorry.
We kind of fucked up. Sorry.
we've fired all of our lawyers and hired new ones.
And they say to write a check with a whole lot of zeros after it.
I have no idea how much money ooh is, but...
Because it was something like, you know, in 88 when they were trying to make it, it was something like Fox had the rights for 25 years or something like that.
Okay.
And when they made the movie, it wasn't quite 25 years later. So technically 20th Century Fox owned the Watchmen movie.
Whoops.
Yeah, instead of Warner Brothers, who did make it.
Right.
Minor
snafu. But anyway, they pay off Fox. They get the movie out there. I got to admit, for what it was, I really like the movie. Did it stay loyal to the book? No.
A
lot of it, it did. I happen to like the movie ending a whole lot better than the book ending.
Comic fans are going to kill me. I think the movie ending works better than the comic does. Another quick note about the comic, even Alan Moore wasn't all that satisfied with the ending of the comic. He said, basically, he knew where everything was going to go up through about issue 10, and then after that was making it up as he went along. Like, he didn't even plan for Rorschach to die. He just said when he got to that point, he goes, there's just no way Rorschach can live. He can't. I have to kill Rorschach.
You can't stay loyal to the character of Rorschach and have him go on leading a normal life
after the information he has. Right. Yeah. So I like the ending of the movie better. It's more logical.
Yeah.
It makes more sense in a real world setting, and it's less out of nowhere than the giant space octopus
is. I'll be honest with you, that's my one of my big problems with Stephen King books and movies and stuff like that is we set up to a really cool psychological premise that's absolutely beautiful and wonderful and suddenly a fucking monster. And I hate the suddenly a monster movies.
Have you ever read The Mist?
I haven't read the actual story.
Have you seen the movie?
I have seen the movie, and more than that, I don't know if it was BBC or there was No, it was
an audio
like
drama.
American Audio Theater or something like that did an audio drama that was very loyal to the book. So.
Okay, did you like the ending of the movie?
It was,
I think the ending of the movie was brilliant. It was something Rod Serling would have been proud to have written in the 60s.
Okay.
That ending. Well, the book, if you remember, ends with them just driving off into the mist after escaping the grocery store and you don't know what happens. All that happens in the movie after that was added by Frank Darabont without Stephen King's approval. Stephen King loved it.
Oh,
he said when it was in the theaters, if anyone gives away the ending of this, which is so pitch perfect, he goes, they deserve to be shot in the street.
Ah.
So sometimes, what I'm trying to point out is that sometimes altering the ending can make a difference.
Yes.
That's why I keep bringing that up.
Yes, and comic book fans hate me, and I'm well aware of that.
You hate them back.
I'm not a big fan of comic books, so just suck my big saggy balls. But I think that the ending of the movie was better.
Yeah, and it just... And he did still kind of get a space octopus in there. The Outer Limits episode they're watching at the end is about a giant space octopus.
Oh, perfect.
So if you watch the TV in the background when they're kind of doing the epilogue, there's a giant space octopus in that. He specifically chose that Outer Limits episode.
That was a nice little nod.
As a little nod, in-joke kind of thing. I think it's the episode The Architects of Fear.
Okay.
So now we've got DC decided, well, we can't really do a sequel to Watchmen because... the story's kind of wrapped up.
Yeah, I mean, if you do a sequel, you're going to have to either take it into an alternate universe or go another generation down.
But why don't we do prequels?
Excellent.
We'll show what happened to all the characters before the movie. And then that way, all the characters that die, you can have new Rorschach stories, new comedian stories.
Sure.
Problem is, it's unnecessary in the way that all prequels are unnecessary. Oh my God, Rorschach's got a gun to his head. What's going to happen? Will he die? No, of course not. The comedian. Basically, you saw all the history you needed to see in the movie and the comic. Do you need to know more about that? No. It's unnecessary in the both. It's unnecessary and there's no tension at all.
And the thing is, when you don't know that history going into Watchmen... when you don't know, for instance, the dynamic between the comedian and
Silk Spectre number one.
Thank you. Blah, 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 blah. Silk Spectre number one. There is a tension created there that not knowing that history is really going to affect you. And
the whole fact that she still continued to love him even after he raped her.
Right.
That actually being unsaid and unspoken is deepens Silk Spectre's characters more and shows that there's much more of a human side to the comedian than I think this 12-issue miniseries is going to do.
True.
It's like the whole thing about Alien. Remember in the first Alien, you don't really see it?
Right, right.
You know, the less you see, the more your mind fills in. That's actually better.
Exactly.
But then there's the fact that these are just, they're wrong. Watchmen is something that you don't touch. There are certain books, certain movies, you don't go and make sequels to. You don't go and make prequels to.
Like Star Wars.
That would be a good one.
Fuck you, Lucas.
I actually am surprised you're not more bitter about The Space Between Spaces. Crystal Skull? That actually pisses me off more than nuking the fridge.
You mean to tell me, did they make a fourth Indiana Jones movie?
Are you still in the denial phase?
The first half of that movie is okay, still completely, and no, it's not. It sucks.
Do you know what's kind of funny, even though it's off topic? Have you seen the Blu-ray trailer for the box set quadrilogy?
No.
It's almost 3 minutes long. Only about 18 seconds of Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Even they're kind of going, and you get the three good movies, and there's this other movie in here too. I mean, even they're not playing this up. That yes, Crystal Skull on Blu-ray.
And a fourth bonus movie for buying the three good ones.
Yeah, it's got Harrison Ford in it.
But, okay. I'm sorry. Just, I knew at the theater. Because I did go see it.
I saw it opening night.
I am a huge Indiana Jones fan. It's a love that my dad and I share.
I should loan you some of the Marvel comics that came out right after Raiders.
That would be interesting. But nonetheless, it's a love that dad and I shared. So it's got, you know, that extra soft spot in my heart.
Seeing these with your dad.
Yeah, saw these with my dad in the theater. And you know, my dad is a huge Indiana Jones fan, and we lived in Indiana at the time. And you see...
in jokey right there.
I'm sorry, but you see Indiana on a big screen, and you're like, well, fuck yeah! Hoosiers rock! Wait a minute, that's the name of the dog. Oh, well, fuck it.
You didn't know that at the time. At the time, you didn't know that.
I know, but, you know, you were thinking, is he from Indiana? Does, you know, so anyway, you see this stuff, and... And so it's got that extra soft spot with my dad. And when Crystal Skull came out, I called my dad. And he's like, yeah, you know, new Indiana Jones movie. Are you going? I said, yeah, I'm going. We ended up going on the same night.
In different states.
There's a state between us. But we ended up going on the same night. And we watched the movie. And I get home. And I call him. And he's home. And he goes, did you go? I said, yeah. Did you? Yes. Okay.
And that's
kind of where he just goes, it happened.
Well, I mean, because of that movie, Jump the Shark got replaced with Nuke the Fridge.
Exactly.
Now when a TV show goes too far, it's, oh, they nuked the fridge and stuff, because, I'm sorry, that's so dumb.
Exactly. And the thing is, you know, you watch Raiders and you watch...
But Crusade was a good ending. Even if you wanted to, for the Indiana Jones stuff, if you wanted to keep doing it, guys, no, you won't find them on the DVDs, you won't find them on the Blu-rays or the videotapes. You got to find bootlegs from when they aired on ABC. Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. Remember Indy, age 50?
Yes.
Old Indy with the eye patch?
Yes.
That's where his history went.
Exactly.
Until George Lucas decided, nah, I'm going to change that, so we're not even going to put those in those segments. Yeah, all those segments are cut out of the DVDs, which is irritating as
yes,
fuck.
Yes, it is. But, Crusade and, I mean, Indy fucking literally rode off into the sunset.
And that's how it should have ended.
That's what you do with that character. It's just like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
And if you have to make a prequel...
Right off into the fucking sunset.
If you have to make a prequel, you do it like they did it.
Exactly.
You know, Temple of Doom takes place before Raiders and Crusade.
Yeah.
No, it takes place like 4 years before, if you look at the dates. So if you're going to do a prequel... That's how you do a prequel.
Exactly.
That it's not even really a prequel. It's just another adventure that happened to take place before.
That's right.
How you do a prequel.
Let me stop right here because there is one thing I have to address.
Okay.
To all of you film buffs who went through art school and film history and took all of that, and if you post on my Facebook or on the Lost in the Static group going, Indiana Jones just stole everything from all these serials in the 30s, you know what? Suck my dick, because yes, he did, but guess what was not in the public eye at the time? Guess what was brought back to the public eye because of Indiana Jones? And it's called inspiration.
No, I can't remember the name of the movie, but there's a Charlton Heston movie where he is Indiana Jones.
Oh, I know.
Lucas stole that. I mean, there's no debating that.
But you have to understand, you know, about 80% of great art in this world is stolen art.
I'm not debating that part.
I know. But, you know, I know. You don't have to point it out to me. I know where they came from. I know the source material. I know the Charlton Heston movie. I realize that. But it's, you know, Apple also didn't make the tablet. Apple did not make the fucking tablet. They made the tablet work. And I would put Indiana Jones in that same category. No, they didn't make this stuff. No, yeah, some of it was stolen shot for shot.
It's the same thing I always say about Reservoir Dogs. It's a blatantly, almost shot-for-shot stolen movie from City on Fire.
Right.
But it's a better movie. It's got better acting, better direction, better action scenes, better music. If Tarantino would just admit he fucking stole it, I'd go, but you made it better.
Exactly.
Just admit you fucking stole it. He's still, I've never seen that for that movie, City on Fire. It sounds interesting.
He lies.
Yes.
And, but, you know, and I do have to say this. A certain website did their top 11 fuck yeah music themes. And they put...
I was offended at number one.
I was too. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Indiana Jones was like back at 7 or something. I'm like, what the hell?
And the Star Wars theme didn't even make it. That was an honorable mention.
I know.
And Back to the Future's theme? Fuck you. You know what? Fuck you, Nostalgia Critic. You're a piece of shit.
Yes, and don't get me wrong. I like the Back to the Future symphonic theme. It's very well done.
But this is the same guy who thinks Manhunter is an inferior movie to Red Dragon.
And
so I don't think his opinion holds a lot of weight.
Okay. But anyway, just had to mention that.
To Before Watchmen real quick.
Before Watchmen.
But then there becomes a point where you go, well, anything iconic can be followed, or in this case,
preceded.
No, I wanted to use Fallout.
Preceded after the fact, I think.
Yeah. And what it comes down to is there's a lot of really good writers and a lot of really good artists that are working on this Before Watchmen train wreck. And what I have to say to you is the same thing that Siskel and Ebert said to all the people involved in Silent Night, Deadly Night back in 1984. For shame. Have you no shame? It's just a paycheck to you people. I mean, is basically what J. Michael Straczynski has shown me at this point is, if the check clears, I'll write it. Man. This is a writer I used to respect. The fact that he would do Before Watchmen, I lost so much respect for him. To him, it's clearly just the check cleared.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it'll be good.
I won't know. I will not read these.
Well, no, I will read them. I won't pay for them. I won't buy them, but I will read them.
I won't. I'm taking the stand that no, I'm not going to read The Rape.
I'm gonna read it. Maybe it'll be good. I don't know.
But aren't there certain projects that are untouchable, such as 1984? Who would even think of making a sequel to 1984? Am I correct?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Now, hang on.
Okay.
Let's define untouchable real quick, because I think that there's a difference. Number one, when it comes to parody, when it comes to making fun of things, when it comes to pointing out the stuff, nothing to me is untouchable. There are no sacred cows.
One of my all-time favorite movies, Brazil, is a parody of 1984. Yes. The original title was even 1984 and a half.
Yes.
And so people are going to try and go, well, your favorite movie is following it. Not really. It's kind of taking it and saying, what if this were a sitcom?
Exactly. And to me, I think when it comes to parody or making fun of things or something like that, nothing is untouchable. And you know,
but doing it straight.
But doing it straight as a sequel or a prequel or I've even heard say, well, it's an ode to blah. It's an ode to Blade Runner. It's an ode to 1984.
Speaking of Blade Runner, Blade Runner 2 should not be happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll agree. I mean, is Harrison Ford attached to that one?
They're trying to get him for a cameo.
A cameo.
But it's going to be a different character. It's not going to be Deckard.
But the whole story of Blade Runner swirls around Deckard.
It's the Blade Runner 2 will not have Deckard, other than maybe a cameo.
But
I think he just cracked.
It's okay. Some stories, the Mass Effect stories, we have some side characters that have enough character. For instance, the Turian.
Liara Tassoni?
No, not Liara. The Turian, the sniper.
Telly Zora?
No, not a girl. The guy, the Turian.
Garrus.
Garrus, thank you, Garrus. Would I love to see or something the story of between Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2, how he became Archangel, stuff like that? That would be an excellent little addition to the Mass Effect universe.
There's a Mass Effect animated series coming out that might touch that.
That might touch that. Tali Zora, my God, the story of her people. If you went and you introduced to me a brand new, oh God, I can't remember their name, their race. There are people shouting at their radios and computers right now going, it's a blah, stupid. But her race, you know, if you introduce, for instance, the sergeant that they worked with that he rescued from the planet where the sun would kill your shields and all of that.
Yeah.
You know, his story and the story of his people in the war with the Geth. There's an excellent story for Mass Effect to go through. And that could be another, you know, multi.
There's a whole shit ton of comics, yeah, so the comics may be doing all that.
They may, I'm not. I picked up a couple of the comics on my iPad.
You were bitching about the artwork.
Oh my God. But nonetheless, you. This is a universe that is thick enough with side characters, with well developed enough characters that I had enough interest in that I would love to see these stories.
Well, and see, sometimes side is not the same as sequel.
Right.
You know, it'd be like going, well, we want another Shepard game. That would be kind of, no, you don't do a game with Commander Shepard again. Maybe the side characters. Sidequels aren't nearly the kind of rape that, even if they're just tangentially related.
There is one way that sidequels and even prequels are really good at raping your original story.
How's that?
Retcon.
Oh, if they retcon, absolutely. Unless they do it smart, like the Star Trek 2009 movie.
Yes.
They did that in a clever enough way that it didn't really fuck with the established history that we had up to that point.
Guess what, guys? New universe. Fa-boonk.
Yeah, and it's like, so everything didn't happen the same, so we can kind of do anything we want, which was really a clever... I mean, it wasn't, you know, like original, like we'd never seen it before, but it was clever that they chose that route. Right. But then you also have, like, speaking of Blade Runner, you have the movie Soldier with Kurt Russell, which is a sidequel to Blade Runner. It takes place in the same continuity, and there are numerous name-drop references to events in the Blade Runner universe.
I haven't seen it, so...
You didn't know Soldier was a sidequel?
I did not.
You remember some of the battles that Roy Batty was at, like Tannhauser Gate and stuff like that?
Yes, yeah.
Well, so was Kurt Russell's character on the opposite side.
See, again, I've not seen Soldier, so...
I know. I'm just telling you that.
Okay.
And, like, there's a spinner in it. A police spinner appears in it.
Neat.
And it was written by the same guy that wrote the script for Blade Runner.
Okay.
So he specifically made it connected to the Blade Runner universe, that basically the super soldiers were the human equivalent to the replicants in Blade Runner, more or less.
Okay.
So now you need to see Soldier.
Now I need to see Soldier.
And it's a surprisingly good movie, too.
And if I wanted to order Soldier, where could I go?
Amazon.com.
There you go.
Use the link at 1201beyond.com. Just click on that. Costs you nothing. Doesn't cost you a thing. But if you go through our link after you've turned off ad blocker and cleared your cookies, then we get a little kickback of whatever you buy. And like I said, it costs you nothing extra. But go to my website, 1201beyond.com, and you can use it for Amazon.uk as well. There's a different banner, so just look for the correct banner for where you are.
On the website, and I checked this out last night because Cassandra was nice enough to get our code up very, very quickly.
The recommendations
exactly.
Code?
Exactly.
Okay.
For the UK, we have 20 recommendations, and it says right at the top, in the UK, and then... Right next to it is another band that says in the U.S., and we made 20 recommendations for our U.K. listeners, or listeners not necessarily in the U.K., but can shop at Amazon U.K., like most of Europe can.
I was going to say, I think it's a good chunk of Europe.
Yeah, pretty good chunk of Europe, and I think even down into Northern Africa and such, they can still shop there. But and then on the other side is in the U.S. We made 20 recommendations for our U.S. listeners.
And Scott and I actually came together on a lot of these. So
yes.
Some of them were, I want this, Scott doesn't, and then Scott had a couple. But more or less, this is stuff where Scott and I came together and said, we think you should buy this. We
exactly.
recommend this DVD, this book, this comic, whatever it is.
Exactly. Games. I even because a listener asked me, because, you know, I'm always drinking coffee when we make the show.
No, you're not. You're drinking pure leaf.
I'm drinking tea today, but I'm usually drinking coffee when we record the show when it's not
100 degrees
outside. Somebody asked me, what kind of coffee do you drink? I even put that up on the U.S. side. So go, again, clear your cookies. Make sure your ad blocker is turned off. If you go through there, doesn't cost you anything extra. No, you don't get a cut on your prices, and we haven't come up with a way to work out a deal for you just yet.
But you help us out.
But you support the show, and you were going to shop at Amazon anyway.
And we probably should address this, and you be nice.
I say nothing.
The Adam and Eve promo has been suspended temporarily. It may be coming back, but for now, the Adam and Eve promo is suspended due to things we're not going to go into on the show. Enough. Scott's a little irritated about it, as am I, but... I'm still working with these people on my other shows, so can you at least allow me to make a little bit of money the side?
You go right ahead. You go right ahead.
And that's not me cutting Scott out. That's just saying the Drome and what codes do still technically work.
Well, right now.
For now. Yeah, they're all in danger, too. But
yeah.
Go read about it on Facebook.
Exactly. And there we go. So that's why we had no promo at the beginning of the show, and that's why We set up this Amazon affiliate, so if you want to support the show, that's one way we can do it. Also at 1201beyond.com, there is a donate button. So,
yes.
And a lot of people have actually been asking, how do I donate directly? Well, you can through PayPal without
a problem.
And that
gets split 50-50 between Scott
yep.
and I. So it's not, it's not, yeah, Josh gets all the money. No.
Nope.
It's split 50-50 down the middle.
Yep.
And usually goes to help pay some bills or even pay for the website to stay up.
Exactly. Or new equipment or stuff like that, which I may actually have to be working on here pretty soon. But that's another story.
Right. Back to the topic at hand. Then there are other things that were thought to be untouchable. And even though, okay, I'm a little divided like on Alien to Aliens as a sequel. Because Alien was a damn near perfect film.
Alien was good.
And when James Cameron took the project, and it was called Alien 2 at that point.
Right.
Okay, it was not called Aliens.
Right.
Everyone, his agent, his wife, his ex-wife, all his friends told him, do not follow Terminator with Alien 2. Whatever you do, do not accept this project. But he kind of went with it, but I can do it justice. And turns out he did.
He did.
But
he did.
I would have been having the same complaint against him. And some people are going to go, well, what if the Before Watchmen books end up doing justice to it? I don't know. To me, it's not the same as Cameron doing justice to Aliens as you guys doing Before Watchmen. Maybe that's just a divide in my mind.
See, I think that's a divide in your brain because I there is potential there. There is potential there, but as my dear friend Ken always told me, he said, do you know what potential means? I said, no. He says, it means you suck now. So there is potential there for Before Watchmen might end up being a good work. I don't know.
And like I said, I won't know because I won't read it.
Well, I will find out. And
I'm boycotting it basically on principle.
I know, and I hate it when you do that.
Why, that I stand up for my principles?
Well, it's just like going out to eat with you. Here, try this. It's really good. No, I don't want to try that. I'm not going to like it. You don't know. You haven't tried it. Just try one little bit. No. Fuck you, then. I'll eat my own food.
That's a pretty accurate analogy, actually.
I know.
No, I'm just telling them, asshat. I'm telling them. They haven't been out to dinner with us.
But see, that's the thing. This is the Before Watchmen is the really good food that you won't try.
And, you don't, but even you don't know if it's good food.
I don't know either, but I'm willing to give it a taste.
I'm not just based on principle. Basically, it's a bunch of money grubbing, both from DC and from the writers and artists, who, like I said, there's a lot of talented people behind this that shouldn't be there.
But at the same time, there's a lot of talented people behind this that obviously have read Watchmen. Maybe some of them want to give it credit.
Some of these people are people that called Alan Moore a friend. And I'm going to take the project that rapes him and continues to allow DC to keep the rights from my friend. That's fucking sleazy, and that should not be rewarded.
I don't know. I'm torn on that. I'll be honest, I'm torn on that. Because to me, for instance, some of the people that we worked with at our former TV station.
Right.
Yes, we've been through a big rigmarole with them. Does that mean that I couldn't go and be cordial and become friends with these people?
Not the ones that that wouldn't back us, that said, I don't want to get involved. They betrayed me. And okay, have you ever seen the trailer for The General's Daughter?
Yes.
Do you remember that great buildup that James Wood has about, you know, was it extortion? Worse. Was it murder? Worse. Was it rape? Worse. What's worse than rape? When you find that out, you'll know the truth. Well, plot spoiler. What was worse than rape? Betrayal.
Well, yeah. But we'll, you know, I guess that's a difference between you and I. Because I can keep legal proceedings separate from personal proceedings, so to speak.
To me, it's people that turned their back on me when I needed them the most. They said, sorry, I can't help. And it's I've always been the person that's been there for other people too. When you need me the most, I'm there for you. Am I not?
I understand. I understand, Josh. We're getting off topic again. So, what is some? Now wait a minute. You said that some properties are untouchable, but some properties I wouldn't mind seeing a sequel to,
like
or a prequel to,
like.
I knew you were going to ask me something, and I had about six lined up in my brain, and they all just went, no, we're not going to be there.
You accidentally hit the recycle bin.
I did. I hit the recycle bin.
Well, Because to me, what it comes down to is there are certain things that maybe not it's okay, but kind of have a built in. Like when they made Star Wars, obviously they had no idea whether Empire Jedi were ever going to get made because they did right. not know it was going to be a hit.
Right.
But the way they ended it, it was in such a way that there are future stories to be told.
Sure.
And then there are other things that are ended in such a way that there's not really anywhere left to go. A perfect example, and I still have not seen the movie, nor will I ever, again, out of principle, The Thing prequel. There's absolutely no reason for that prequel to exist. I've heard absolutely nothing but bad things about it. And it is the definition of an unnecessary movie.
I'll probably see it out of pure curiosity, but yeah, when I've got friends and people that I trust and even listeners and listeners who have become friends going, don't bother. Then
okay, our friend Hank Carlson,
right.
the night he went and saw it, he got out of the theater, he was walking to his car, and I got an angry phone call from him. He spent the next hour screaming into his phone in the parking lot of the movie theater about why this is the worst film he's ever wasted money on. That's enough to sell me on not wanting to see this movie.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But, like, The Thing, you don't need a prequel.
No, you don't. Because
someone in Hollywood said, you know, we never find out what happens at the Norwegian camp or how they initially find the UFO.
We don't really
There's
need
a story
to.
There. Right. You don't need to. It's actually much more mysterious when you just see all this chaos and the burned bodies and the slashed wrists and the huge block of ice and whatnot. I don't want to see what the thing looked like. I don't need to see the inside of his spacecraft.
This is true.
It's unnecessary, and it actually wrecks the 20 years that I've been imagining these things.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
So, like the Thing prequel, the Thing is something you don't touch. And technically, they did long before that with the sequels in comic books. They had sequels that picked up right where the ending was, and not really a spoiler because it's non-canon, Childs was infected, the big black guy.
Right.
And he all things out on the helicopter and tries to take it over as him and MacReady are being rescued. And that right there kind of pisses on that brilliant ending they had of, is one of them infected? Are they both clean? Or are they just both going to die?
We don't know.
That's an ending that should have been left ambiguous. We didn't need a prequel. We didn't need a sequel. That movie stands on its own.
I agree.
You've seen They Live, right?
Yes.
Well, for years now, the Sci-Fi Channel has been trying to make a TV series out of They Live. Because they said, well, they only took down the one transmitter in Los Angeles. And, you know, we want to show the resistance of the humans. It's not really necessary, isn't it? I mean, didn't that movie kind of end where it should have?
Well, yeah, but I can understand, you know, I can understand. Again, you're taking the story and you're moving, let's say they move it from Los Angeles to Chicago, Indianapolis, somewhere in the Midwest, you know, and it becomes the same story with different people or at least the same cause with different people. And that could be interesting. That could be done without being a direct sequel. It could be, you know, here's another cell. V.
He's got a cat on his shoulder.
Yeah, I do. V. That's
original
another story.
Original or new one?
Either or. Although the new one
sucks.
Really sucked.
So did the TV series from the 80s, but the first two miniseries
yeah,
were fucking
two,
brilliant.
The first
Especially
two
the second one.
Good.
I'm sorry. Michael Ironside, he makes anything awesome.
This is true. No, the new one kind of sucked. And to be honest, that's one of the reboots that I was kind of excited about because I thought, wow, they're gonna update the effects and
the whole thing was an indictment of the Obama administration.
Yeah, and they lost the whole Nazi parallel and
they basically lost the narrative is what happened.
Yeah, and then they did the stupid thing. Television producers, future television producers, if you're listening, here's the stupid thing. We're not interested in the love stories.
It's always a love story. Oh, my God.
We're not interested. Women are not your audience.
Well, okay, just a quick side rant. I won't take up too much time.
Okay.
Something I'm sick of in TV.
Right.
This happens in sitcoms, in dramas, in sci-fi. The guy loves the girl, but the girl doesn't see it, and she's dating a total douchebag that only the best friend who loves her can see.
Right.
How many goddamn times does that need to be in a TV show? Okay, that is a crutch for bad writers. If you see a TV show where that's happening, it's a bad writer involved. I'm sick of that. If I see that once more, I quit the series as soon as that plot line rears its head. Exactly. I'm sick of it.
And real girls out there, if you're dating a douchebag and your best friend tells you he's a douchebag,
he probably
listen.
Is. If everyone else can see he's a douchebag, but you see a softer side of him, you're blind.
Yeah. One of Dawn's best friends was in that situation for years, and she was unfortunately married to the guy, and finally she opened her eyes. It took him backhanding her, but she opened her eyes, and thank God she did when she did, or it could have turned into something very much more abusive.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes when something has already been diluted,
yeah,
that can give you pure inspiration. Look at the Stargate franchise. Totally diluted. SG-1, not really good.
Right.
Atlantis, not really good. Cartoon, fucking terrible.
Yes.
And then somebody said, let's do something radically different with Stargate Universe. And you know what? It was fucking amazing. It was so unlike Stargate that it doesn't fit into the Stargate Universe other than the fact that it, you know, continuity-wise does.
Right.
And a lot of people were going, you don't follow Atlantis. You don't follow SG-1. This is stupid. It's untouchable. SG-U worked.
Yeah, it did.
Worked really fucking good.
But here's another bit. Yeah, look. In a 2.5-hour movie or in a 2-hour movie or something like that, a love story works because it develops. It develops quickly and we have a resolution. See Star Wars. It kind of took Leia and Han 3 movies to work that out. But
I'm glad you went with Leia and Han and not Leia and Luke, because that didn't get creepy until the third one.
Yeah, that didn't get creepy until the third one. But it took Leia and Han 3 movies to work it out, but it is perfectly paced. And they really had it kind of worked out by the second one.
Yeah, they kind of had an idea of where it was going to go.
Exactly. And then, you know, Jedi just cemented it.
No, it carbonated it.
Yeah, it carbonated it.
You might as well make a nerd reference. Shut up. You might as well make a nerd joke there.
But nonetheless, it works. When you do a love story on a television series and you drag it out episode after episode after episode.
Love triangles, I know they happen in real life. They're not interesting to
watch. They're really not. They're just infuriating.
Well, I want to bring up something else that previously was thought to be untouchable, but you just found out before the show they're making a sequel.
Okay.
Christmas Story 2 is in production.
Oh, my fucking God. Are you kidding me?
I was not. No. Daniel Stern is taking over as the old man. You know Daniel Stern?
Don't care.
The other guy that's not Joe Pesci from the Home Alone movies.
Right.
And Stacey Travis, an actress I really like. You might remember her as the evil senator from the last season of Angel.
Oh, okay, yeah.
She's taken over for Melinda Dillon as the mom. And it's going to be, at this point, the plot that they've released, basically Ralphie brings his kids to his grandparents for their first Christmas with their grandparents, and it's Christmas Story 2. And it's got the same continuity, same characters, and I'm trying to stay calm, but you don't make a sequel to A Christmas Story.
Okay, that's another movie that Dad and I watch it every year.
Like 9 times?
No, just once. And then we watch it and the reason why we watch it together is because, number one, it takes place in South Bend, Indiana, at least the short story that it's based on did.
I can't remember where the movie's technically
takes
place.
But trust me, we see the neighborhood. It's basically South Bend, Indiana.
Okay.
And there is so much in that movie that really reminds... I mean, Dad looked
at me... It takes you back.
Dad looked at me last year and he goes, I am Ralphie. Back then, that's exactly how I was. And he says that it, for the time, for the period, for the way people acted, he goes, it's pitch perfect for my neighborhood.
Poisoning. Yes.
But and so that's another, yeah, that's what makes it untouchable. When you have a property that has that deeply emotional
touch, ties to basically everyone that's alive right now.
Yeah, when it's that deeply emotionally moving and that tied to you, to where people are looking at A Christmas Story and going, this is Americana.
But then my question to you is, what are respectable actors like Stacey Travis and Daniel Stern going, I'll do that movie that's going to be critically lambasted, is never going to make a profit, and is going to be thought of as the worst idea in the last decade.
And again, I think that's because those people err on the side that I do.
The check cleared?
I have never had this Thai food before. And this actually happened to me once when I was in Brazil with my mother. Whole menus in Portuguese, no pictures.
I'll have that goofy sounding word and the one that starts with P.
And to tell you the truth, we knew the Portuguese word for spaghetti. We don't now, but
the Portuguese have a word for an Italian food. That's kind of fucked. But think about it on an esoteric level. It's kind of weird, isn't it?
Well, it was the Portuguese word for noodles, basically.
Okay, I thought like spaghetti as the word spaghetti. Okay,
It was a Portuguese word for noodles, and we saw this and we go, that's got noodles in it. We know what noodles are. We'll take this. And they brought out this huge pot of, it was basically spaghetti with chicken meatballs and octopus. You might say, and that's kind of what we said when it got to our table, but we tried it. I like octopus. And this
in
might,
spaghetti.
This might be, this movie might be the octopus in spaghetti.
I think you're really reaching, because there's no way A Christmas Story 2 is going to be anything more than a shameless cash
in. You're right. I'm really reaching on this particular deal. But what I'm saying
if you say in general, I see what you're saying. In this example, I'm calling you out as bullshit, man.
Okay. Bad example. But so bad for this example. At the best, this could be fried calamari that's not all that rubbery. But you know, the truth is, can you tell I'm a little hungry?
We're going out to eat after we're done recording.
Exactly. But in general, sometimes those sequels, those sidequels, those prequels could end up being the octopus and spaghetti.
But I want to see how large the balls were of the producer that said, you know what A Christmas Story needs? A sequel. And I'm the one to do it. That guy's got brass fucking balls, whether he's wrong or not. That's a ballsy move.
Now, great American movie that is really, really good, and I know we're running a little short on time here, but Vacation.
National Lampoon's?
National Lampoon's Vacation. Never in a million years would I watch that movie and have thought that European Vacation and Christmas Vacation would be as good as they were.
Well, European wasn't very good, but I'll give you Christmas Vacation.
Okay. You know, and you notice I said as good as they were.
Okay.
You know, never would I have looked at that movie and said, boy, that needs a sequel. Prior to John Candy's death, he was talking about doing a sequel to Great Outdoors.
Why?
I don't know. But, you know, maybe with John Candy attached, had he not passed on, it would have been good. I don't know. It's worth a shot.
What I'm trying to say is, don't you lose respect for the people that are, well, the check cleared, so I'm willing to rape this property.
If the property comes in and it's obvious that it's just
a bad idea.
If it's a bad idea from the get-go, if it's badly executed, and if it doesn't respect the original work, and we did that whole episode on respecting the, if it doesn't respect the original work and it's obviously just cashing in on the name Home Alone 2 and 3, then
Tim Burton's Dark Shadows.
Exactly. Then you've got, you know, that's one thing. If it does respect the original work and all of that, then that's something else. Are any of these untouchable? I don't know. I don't know anymore.
The way I look at it, I lose respect for the people. We're out of time though. Go to Amazon or no, not Amazon.
No. Go to 1201 Beyond. Clear your cookies. Turn off the ad blocker. Go to 1201
Otherwise,
Beyond.
Otherwise, I get yelled at like Scott. The ads aren't there. Is ad blocker on?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. He does that rolling eyes. No.
Click. Oh, there they are. But yeah, clear your cookies. Turn off your ad blocker. Go to 1201beyond.com. Check out our recommendations. You don't have to buy any of our recommendations, but if you go through that and buy whatever you're normally going to buy,
It helps us out.
It helps us out. So thank you all very, very much for joining us.
He almost just knocked his tea over. Are you back to the wanting to kill the keyboard with whatever you're drinking again?
I might be. You never know.
Because it's like, so. Jesus, it's been almost 3 weeks since you've attempted to kill that keyboard
I'm working on it. Bye.